Welcome to the Quanta Science Podcast. Each episode, we bring you stories about developments in science and mathematics. I'm Susan Vallett. For 50 years, physicists have understood current as a flow of charged particles. But a new experiment has found that in at least one strange material, this understanding falls apart. That's next.
It's season 3 of The Joy of Why, and I still have a lot of questions. Like, what is this thing we call time? Why does altruism exist? And where is Jan 11?
I'm here, astrophysicist and co-host, ready for anything.
That's right, I'm bringing in the A-team.
So brace yourselves.
Get ready to learn.
I'm Jan 11.
I'm Steve Strogatz.
And this is...
Quanta Magazine's podcast, The Joy of Why.
New episodes drop every other Thursday.
After a year of trial and error, Li Yangchen had managed to whittle down a metallic wire into a microscopic strand half the width of an E. coli bacterium. It was just thin enough to allow a trickle of electric current to pass through. Chen hoped the drips of that current might help settle a persistent mystery about how charge moves through a bewildering class of materials known as strange metals. Chen, then a grad student, and his collaborators at Rice University measured the current flowing through their atoms-thin strand of metal. And they found that it flowed smoothly and evenly. In fact, it flowed so evenly that it defied physicists' standard conception of electricity in metals. Canonically, electric current results from the collective movement of electrons, each carrying one indivisible chunk of electric charge. But the dead steadiness of Chen's current implied that it wasn't made of units at all. It was like finding a liquid that somehow lacked individually recognizable molecules. While that might sound outlandish, it's exactly what some physicists expected from the metal the group tested, which along with its unusual kin has beguiled and bewildered physicists since the 1980s. Subir Sachdev is a theoretical physicist at Harvard University who specializes in strange metals.
Just a very beautiful piece of work. We didn't know about it when we were working on our theory. And short noise historically has been extremely important in actually learning about the discreteness of the charge in any material.
Chen's observation, reported last year in the journal Science, is one of the most straightforward indications yet that whatever carries current through these unusual metals doesn't look anything like electrons. The experiment strengthens suspicions that a new quantum phenomenon is arising within strange metals. It also provides new grist for theoretical physicists attempting to understand what it might be. Peter Abamonte is a physicist at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
Strange metals, no one has any earthly idea where they're coming from. It used to be considered an inconvenience. Now we realize there's a different phase of matter.
The first challenge to the conventional understanding of metals came in 1986. That's when Georg Bednortz and Carl Alex Müller rocked the physics world with their discovery of high-temperature superconductors. These are materials that perfectly carry an electric current even at relatively warm temperatures. Familiar metals, like tin and mercury, become superconductors only when chilled to within a few degrees of absolute zero. Bednortz and Müller measured the electrical resistance in a copper-based, or cuprate, material, and saw that it vanished at a relatively balmy 35 kelvins. For that breakthrough discovery, Bednortz and Müller won a Nobel Prize just a year later. Physicists soon realized that high-temperature superconductivity was only the beginning of the mysterious behavior of the cuprates. The cuprates got really weird when they stopped superconducting and started resisting. As all metals warm, resistance increases. Warmer temperatures mean atoms and electrons jiggle more, creating more resistance-inducing collisions as electrons shuttle current through a material. In normal metals, such as nickel, resistance rises quadratically at low temperatures, slowly at first, and then faster and faster. But in the cuprates, it rose linearly. Each degree of warming brought the same increase in resistance. It's a bizarre pattern that continued over hundreds of degrees, and in terms of strangeness, overshadowed the material's superconducting ability. The cuprates were the strangest metals researchers had ever seen. Andrei Chubukov is a theoretical physicist at the University of Minnesota.
There is a much larger elephant in the room. Superconductivity is a mouse, but the elephant in the room is this strange metal behavior.
The linear rise in resistance threatened a celebrated explanation of how electric charge moves through metals. Proposed in 1956, Lev Landau's Fermi liquid theory placed electrons at the center of it all. It built upon earlier theories that, for simplicity, assumed that electrons carry electric current and that the electrons move through a metal like a gas. They flit freely between atoms without interacting with each other. Landau added a way of handling the crucial but complicated fact that electrons interact. They're negatively charged, which means they constantly repel each other. Considering this interaction between the particles transformed the electron gas into something of an ocean. Now, as one electron moved through the fluid of electrons, it disturbed the nearby electrons. Through a complicated series of interactions involving mutual repulsion, these now gently interacting electrons ended up traveling in crowds, in clumps known as quasiparticles. The miracle of Fermi liquid theory is that each quasiparticle behaved almost exactly as if it were a single fundamental electron. One major difference, though, was that depending on the material, these blobs moved more sluggishly or more nimbly than a bare electron, effectively acting heavier or lighter. Now, just by adjusting the mass terms in their equations, physicists could continue to treat current as the movement of electrons, only with an asterisk specifying that each electron was really a quasi-particle clump. A major triumph of Landau's framework was that in normal metals, it nailed the complicated way in which resistance rises quadratically with temperature. Electron-like quasi-particles became the standard way of understanding metals. Here's Subir Sachdev.
That's the prediction of Fermi liquid theory. That's in every textbook, that the resistance of a metal at low temperatures should increase quadratically with temperature.
But in the cuprates, Landau's theory failed dramatically. Resistance rose in an immaculate line rather than the standard quadratic curve. Physicists have long interpreted this line as a sign that cuprates are home to a new physical phenomenon. Gregory Bobinger is a physicist at Florida State University who spent much of his career studying the cuprate's linear response. He says you pretty much have to believe that nature is either giving you a clue or is incredibly cruel. He says it's too simple and beguiling of a signature not to be physically important. And the cuprates were just the beginning. Researchers have since discovered a host of disparate materials with the same alluring linear resistance, including organic Becquerel salts and misaligned sheets of graphene. As these strange metals proliferated, scientists wondered why Landau's Fermi fluid theory seemed to break down in all these different materials. Some came to suspect that it was because there were no quasi-particles at all. The electrons were somehow organizing themselves in a strange new way that obscured any individuality, much as the discrete nature of grapes gets lost in a bottle of wine. But one does not simply abolish electrons. To some scientists, a potentially continuous electric current, one that isn't divvied up into electrons, is too radical. And some strange metal experiments continue to match certain predictions of Landau's theory. The persisting controversy prompted Chen's thesis advisor, Douglas Nadelson of Rice University, along with his colleague, Qimiao Si, to consider how they might more directly scrutinize the anatomy of the charge moving through a strange metal.
There was a lot of excitement about, on the theory side, ways to map strong coupling electronic problems to weak coupling gravitational problems. And so this is all this black hole stuff, right? And so these are very dramatic things, but as an experimentalist, you know, the thing I would always say when I hear these things is, well, it sounds really interesting, but how would I test it? What could I measure that would actually tell me if this is what's going on? and you are pretty limited.
The team's goal was to dissect the current in a strange metal. Did it come in electron-sized chunks of charge? Did it come in chunks at all? To find out, they took inspiration from a classic way of measuring fluctuations in a flow called the shot noise. That's a phenomenon that can be understood if we think of the ways that rain might fall during a rainstorm, says Nadelson.
Imagine rain is falling on, the roof of your car or your windshield. You can have the same amount of water hitting the car in different ways. I could have like a very, very fine mist where there's a certain amount of water hitting the car per unit time, and it's all very fine. There's very little in the way of fluctuations, completely steady.
So the variation in arrival time of the droplets, and therefore the shot noise, will be low.
Or imagine instead I have a few huge but randomly spaced raindrops. We've all seen this as we've driven into a storm or something.
In this case, the variation in when those drops hit your roof will be high. Sometimes drops will splatter back to back, and at other times they'll be spaced out, so the shot noise is high. Here's Nadelson again.
Just measuring the current, just measuring the rate at which water shows up, doesn't tell you the whole picture. If you look and think about the fluctuations in how the water shows up, you can learn a lot more.
Similarly, listening to the crackle in electric current can tell you about the chunks of charge that make it up. Those chunks are normally Landau's electron-like quasi-particles. Indeed, recording the shot noise in a normal metal is a common way of measuring the fundamental charge of the electron. To get to the heart of a strange metal's current, the team wanted to measure shot noise. But electric shot noise can be obscured if electrons are pushed around by ripples in a metal's atomic lattice. To avoid that fuzz, researchers send current through wires so short that the ripples don't have time to influence the electrons. These wires need to be nanoscopic in scale. The group chose to work with a particular strange metal made of ytterbium, rhodium, and silicon. Here's Nadelson.
Ytterbium, rhodium, II, silicon, II is a rare earth silicide, and this is a family of materials that is not worked with much in industry.
Nadelson and C's longtime collaborator, Silke Buhler-Passion of the Vienna University of Technology, had worked out how to grow the material in films just dozens of nanometers thick. That took care of one spatial dimension. It then fell to Chin to work out how to make those films and carve out a wire measuring mere nanometers in length and width. Over the course of about a year, Chin tested different ways of whittling down the metal by effectively sandblasting it with atoms. But in trial after trial, he found that the resulting nanowires suffered atomic-scale damage that destroyed the strange metal's characteristic linear resistance. After dozens of attempts, he landed on a process that worked. He plated the metal with chromium, used a stream of argon gas to blast away all but a thin line of the chromium-protected strange metal, then stripped off the chromium with a bath of hydrochloric acid. In the end, Chin, who successfully earned his doctorate and has since gone on to work in finance, crafted a handful of nearly flawless nanowires. Each was roughly 600 nanometers long by 200 nanometers wide, about 50 times narrower than a red blood cell. After cooling them to frigid, single-digit Kelvin temperatures, the researchers ran electric current through the strange metal nanowires. They also ran current through nanowires made of normal gold. The current in the gold wire crackled in the familiar way that currents made of charged quasi-particles do, like fat raindrops splattering on the car roof. But in the strange metal, current slipped quietly through the nanowire, an effect akin to the nearly silent hiss of mist. The most straightforward interpretation of the experiment is that charge in this strange metal does not flow in electron-sized chunks. C says the experimental data provides strong evidence that quasi-particles are lost in the strange metal. But not all physicists are fully convinced that the experiment kills Landau's quasi-particles. Brad Ramshaw is a physicist at Cornell University.
It's a very, very bold claim for a lot of reasons. So you need bold data.
One limitation of the experiment is that the group tested only one material. Just because shot noise is low in Chin's ytterbium, rhodium, and silicon blend, that doesn't guarantee that it's low in other strange metals. and a one-off anomaly can always be ascribed to some poorly understood detail about that material. Ramshaw also points out that metals ring with all manner of strange vibrations that might distort shot noise in the current. Chin and his colleagues ruled out interference from the more common vibrations, but it's possible that some exotic ripple evaded their notice. Still, Ramshaw finds the experiment compelling.
I think it's strongly motivating for people to try to do other things to see if they're also consistent with no electrons.
If the quasi-particle picture continues to crumble, what could replace it? How is current moving around strange metals, if not in electron-like parcels of charge? It's not an easy solution to describe, much less put into precise mathematical terms, says condensed matter physicist Douglas Nadelson.
The most dramatic failure of Fermi-liquid theory would be the breakdown of this quasi-particle picture. Because in some sense, if we don't know how to describe, like, that's the way we describe the low energy excitations of these systems. And so it becomes very challenging to come up with what's the right vocabulary you use to talk about the low energy excitations if you're not going to talk about quasi-particles.
When pressed, physicists respond to this question with a quiver of metaphors for what appears when individual electrons disappear. They meld into an entangled quantum soup. They congeal into a jelly. They form a frothy mess of charge sloshing around. Philip Phillips of Urbana-Champaign likens a strange metal's electrons to the rubber in a tire. When rubber comes out of a tree, its molecules line up in individual strings. But during the vulcanization process, these strings transform into a rugged net. A new substance emerges from the collection of individuals, says Phillips.
If the problem of cross-linked polymerization or vulcanization were just a question of just the number of strands, that problem would have been solved a long time ago. But here, with cross-linking, you're getting something that's bigger than the sum of its parts. But the electrons themselves have no integrity.
To go beyond vague descriptions of emergence, physicists need a precise mathematical description, an as-yet undiscovered Fermi fluid theory for strange metals. Subir Sachdev helped develop one simplistic candidate, the SYK model, in the early 1990s. It got the linear resistance right, but it had nothing at all to do with real materials made of a real grid of atoms. For one thing, it had no space. All electrons sit at a single point where they randomly interact and become entangled with all other electrons. Over the last couple of years, Sachdev, Avishkar Patel of the Flatiron Institute, and their collaborators have been working on bringing space into the SYK model. They spread electron interactions across space by considering the effects of flaws in the atomic lattice, spots where atoms have gone missing or extra atoms have appeared. This dusting of atomic imperfections causes random variations in how pairs of electrons interact and become entangled. The resulting tapestry of entangled electrons has a linearly rising resistance, the hallmark of a strange metal. They recently used their framework to calculate shot noise as well. The numbers don't quite match Chin's observations, but they form the same qualitative pattern. Here's Sachdev.
We have to really make some simplifying assumptions on the nature of the electron distribution function as it goes from one end of the wire to the other. That assumption works very well in other cases. We haven't really proven it works here, and we're trying to work that through. I'm trying to be a little cautious. I'm going to be excited. You know, all the trends are right.
Other researchers emphasize that the theoretical situation remains fluid. It isn't clear to some whether materials as distinct from one another as sheets of graphene and cuprate superconductors could all share a similar enough slate of flaws to produce the shared strange metal properties in the way required by Sachdev and Patel's theory. And alternative theories abound. For example, Phillips suspects that strange metals call for an emergent form of electromagnetism that doesn't rely on whole electrons. At the same time, Si and Buhler-Passion have spent about 20 years developing and exploring a theory for how quasi-particles dissolve when a system sits at a quantum critical point. That's where two different quantum mechanical states struggle for the upper hand. In the shot noise experiment, they brought their nanowires to just such a critical point. While physicists don't yet agree on why electric charges appear to dissolve inside strange metals, or even if they truly do dissolve, they're determined to find out. Or in the words of Nadelson,
if we really think that there's a whole category of metals out there that we don't understand, I think it's important to understand those.
Arlene Santana helped with this episode. I'm Susan Vallett. For more on this story, read Charlie Wood's full article, Meet Strange Metals, Where Electricity May Flow Without Electrons, on our website, quantummagazine.org. Just a quick note, the Flatiron Institute is funded by the Simons Foundation, which also funds this editorially independent magazine. Neither the Flatiron Institute nor the Simons Foundation has any influence over our coverage. Also, make sure to tell your friends about the Quanta Science podcast and give us a positive review or follow where you listen. It helps people find this podcast.